Yes, you're listening to Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk 1210, but you don't have to just listen. You can also join us in the discussion. Call in number 520-750-7456. And Oscar's not here today. We actually have a new producer, Mike, and Jackson, he's out. But so we got a couple new guys here, so if anything goes awry, we can blame them today instead of blaming me when I mess up. So if you can't stay by your radio, you can always stream us live, powertalk1210.com. And if you've missed a show or want to hear one again, you can go to solomononblast.com to listen at your convenience. Last week when Pastor Warner was here, which we always appreciate when he joins us, he mentioned the annual conference that the church was having this past week. And it was a great week for the conference this past week. It was refreshing to see so many people really living lives with the wisdom of Solomon. It helps balance out what you see in the news where our culture seems to be, I guess I would say, flat out crazy. The difference in a person's life with wisdom, knowledge, and understanding in contrast to the confusion of the culture without it is just night and day, to say the least. Yeah. And I was driving home from the conference the other night, and it was probably about 9:30, 10 o'clock, and I saw a car ahead of me that looked like a police car. I was on the highway, so I thought it might be, you know, highway patrol. Not that I was speeding or anything, but everybody, you know, gets a little nervous when the cop car is around. Anyways, as I got closer, I figured out that it was actually a car with a label on it that said TUSD School Safety. So it's a TUSD School Safety car. And as I got closer and went by, got a logo on the side door, antenna sticking out all over the place. And it got me to thinking, how bad are things in our culture, in our society, at the schools, that the schools have to have school safety cars driving around? And if they're school safety cars, obviously then there's got to be school safety people driving those cars, essentially a whole school safety patrol. And I thought, when did this happen that there's school safety patrols involved? And it suddenly dawned on me that in reality, there were safety patrols back when I was in grade school. In fact, I was one. I was part of the safety patrol, probably when I was about 10 years old, maybe fifth grade. But I didn't have a nice air-conditioned car with radios in it or anything. All I had was one of those fluorescent orange safety belts, and they gave you a cool little badge to go along with it. The job was really just being a crossing guard, but that was the safety patrol that we had in the schools back when I grew up. Far cry from where things are today. So why is it we've gone from 10-year-olds being a safety patrol to having essentially another police force within the schools? I think part of it is because the culture has chosen to ignore the wisdom of Solomon. Solomon says we're train up a child in the way he should go, and when they're older, they will not depart from it. Now, our culture probably thinks that, you know, they are doing that, and in reality, they are training them up, but it's not in Solomon's wisdom, for sure. And it's not what Solomon was referring to. Solomon also says that he who spares his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him promptly. That is part of the wisdom that's being ignored. Parents and even the schools used to be able to use that rod of correction. And with that, you could have 10-year-olds as the school safety patrols. But now our culture says you have to be sensitive to everybody's feelings, and so there is no discipline. And because there's no discipline, instead of having an inexpensive wooden paddle for the rod of correction, the schools have to have a whole police force in place. They don't count the cost of their decisions. And I know I never got paid being on the safety patrol, but I'd say that's probably not the case of the TUSD school safety people. And when you've got expensive cars and everything else that goes along with it, you know, I looked up on their website, they have a whole department of school safety: director of training, safety manager, school safety, security manager, key control, and there was crossing guards. Now, these jobs used to be handled by the principal, the janitor, and a bunch of kids with fluorescent orange belts. But the cost of ignoring Solomon's wisdom can be very high. Solomon tells his son, keep my words and treasure my commands within you. keep my commands and live, and he tells them the cost of not doing it. As a bird hastens to snare, he did not know it would cost his life. That's a very high cost. One, we should never forget to count. We'll be right back with more Solomon on Black. We're back with Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk 1210. Ecclesiastes 5:1 says, walk prudently when you go to the house of God, and draw near to hear rather than to give the sacrifice of fools, for they do not know that they do evil. Now, this story with regards to the shooting of the 9 people in South Carolina, I hate doing stories like these. They really are hard to do. But you know, when we started this radio show, we decided that we had to talk about real issues in the culture and things that can be addressed by Solomon's wisdom. But it's these kind of stories that are, like I said, they're really hard to do. And in this particular situation, especially after just having had a Bible conference and spent a week of listening to preachers and having a fellowship, and like I said at the beginning, that just a refreshing to see people that are so committed and using the wisdom of Solomon in their lives, to have a tragedy like this occur in the middle of all this, how do you address this? Oh, hold on. Okay, let's see. We got the right microphone?
Yeah.
Okay, now we got the right microphone.
Oh, no worries.
I told you we were going to have technical problems today.
We were talking about this, you know, as we were in the office a few minutes ago, and these things are so difficult because, you know, there's no way in the world you can discuss this with, you know, complete empathy. You just can't do it. And you don't want to mishandle this and treat it as some kind of trivial news story as you kind of go through a program. These kinds of stories in particular, I think this is one of the worst stories we've dealt with in the year that we've been doing this. It's just so very difficult to, you know, to even consider what happened. This young guy, Dylan Roof, going in there and being received by this prayer group. They allow him to be there. They don't know him, but they kind of extend, obviously, some open-hearted charity to him to just, you know, we don't
participate.
Know who you are. Yeah, sure. Sit down. We don't really know you, but we're believers. We're Christians. Find a place. And to take advantage of all of that and wait out his time while these people prayed, and then to do something just so unmentionable. It's just, I don't think you could ever wrap your mind around it. And part of it is I'll never want to be able to wrap my mind around that because it doesn't make sense. It's just, it's evil, and it's a manifestation of evil, you know, before our eyes.
Especially when you consider that these people are sitting there praying that there would maybe be some level of conviction in this person's mind that would say, there's good here, right? How can you not see the good and overlook it and continue on the path that he took in the midst of obviously something that...
Yeah, that's what makes it so senseless, is that they treated him good. They treated him with human dignity. That basically refuted everything he thought, you know? He writes all this crazy stuff about race and this and that, and then he sits there, and it's exactly opposite of what he's saying about them. And they're showing him...
Love, they're showing him...
Yeah, they're embracing him. Right. Without any concern,
reservations, for anything.
Issue, race is not an issue. His age is not an issue. He's just sitting there with them, and there's no demographic factor whatsoever in play. And yet, in spite of all of that, he still does this unthinkable evil. Now the question is, where does that come from? If you don't believe in evil, I'll tell you. You better reconsider some of these realities.
Right. And when I consider this, I have to say that a lot of it could, like I started out with, was there's a training, a way we're raising children that doesn't have that wisdom involved in it, and there's no conscience, there's no consideration for somebody else that... If you've never been, as we were talking about, if you haven't been harmed, what are you really striving with these people for?
Well, there's a lot of very, very unhealthy people in our society. And it just, again, there's no easy explanations for this. There's a lot of factors now. And one of the things that I think everybody fears about this, not just the devastating loss of life, senseless loss of life, that happened in that place, which is really the real story, but the implications now, how this will become a political football. We know that there are those people out there that hate to let any good crisis go to waste. There's a reality that there are politicians that are fundamentally, in my opinion, they're ambulance chasers, and they salivate over these kinds of stories because they can fit these into their political agendas. And they're able to make hay out of this. They're able to promote their voice out of situations like this. And it just makes you really nervous what certain people are going to do with this. And it's a terrible, terrible story. And you'd wish that there could be a sacred element to this where people just say, okay, this is one of those senseless things, and let's properly grieve for those that have suffered loss of life and whatnot. And just the other issues. I have to say, though, Doug, I appreciate some of the statements made by family members so far. That
in this one article here, it says on Friday, some of those family members actually got a chance to speak to him during his bail hearing. And he could hear him, but he couldn't see him. And the one lady said, "We welcomed you Wednesday night in our Bible study with open arms." This was Felicia Sanders, who survived the attack but lost her son. She says, "You have killed some of the most beautiful people that I know. Every fiber in my body hurts, and I'll never be the same." Her son, Tawanza, was my hero. And other family members offered forgiveness and mercy to him even. One even told him to repent and confess, and you'll be okay. So it's those kind of things that fly in the face of what he's talking, or the whole point of what he was doing and what he was against, that these people have true faith, Christian faith, that they're following their beliefs, that you have to still be able to forgive. Yeah, they're going to grieve a lot from this, and everybody is.
Now, I know you have to discuss at some point the racial element here, because unfortunately that is what motivated, to a degree, Dylann Roof, and you can't ignore that reality. There's a lot of other factors to him, like medication and all, you know, that's been associated with lots of these teenage/young adult crimes. But you also can't ignore the fact that this is a religious issue. This is a Christian issue as well. These were Christian people gathered together to worship God, and they were assaulted because, for whatever reason, they were targeted by this man because they were considered probably vulnerable as worshipers, and that's very important. In other words, Dylann Roof didn't take a trip down to Baltimore last month to shoot off his mouth.
Or Chicago,
or any of these places. He chose a group of worshipers to act out on, and that's a very significant issue, I think.
Yeah, you have to ask yourself, what was it that drove him specifically to go into a church like that? It wasn't in his hometown. They say he didn't live in Charleston. So what was it what was his motivation behind it? I think maybe it was to some extent black, like he said, but there's got to be another element to it that is what he chose for his.
Yeah, these are Christian people that are going to let me sit there
and accept me as I am.
I mean, and it's a very backhanded compliment, obviously, but I think his commentary is he knew where to go based on the charity that he expected to receive.
Right.
And this is a Christian issue, you know, and it's not just a racial issue, just like in the Boko Haram in northern Nigeria, you know, in the previous months and viciously assaulting Christian people. And some of the images, you know, when they went in and just senselessly murdered students in the school. And I saw some of those images. I mean, you never get them out of your head. What's in play here, and I don't think you can de-emphasize that reality as well.
And the other aspect that kind of I find disturbing, to say the at least in part, from the mainstream media is that the mainstream media loves to just rag on. I mean, we talked about it last week with Pastor Warren, whether the church was relevant in society, and how mainstream media really is against the church, the religion in our country. They want everything secularized. But when this tragedy comes about, boy, they have no problem at all of, you know, suddenly turning the tables and saying, oh, you know, this is really bad. These people were praying and everything else. But they don't want people to pray when there isn't a tragedy.
Yeah, what a lot of people in America who don't follow this don't realize is how evangelical Christians, white evangelical Christians, let's just put it that way, which is really just not, they're not all white, they're just the lion's share, you might say, of that segment, how it often overlaps with the black church. I mean, there's many, many events and common ideas that are shared between the two communities. And you just never hear that because it's not politically, it's not meted out to you that way in the media. It doesn't fit their paradigm,
right?
So they don't talk about it. But anybody who's on the end knows how real that is, how true, how it, there's lots of common ground between these two segments of American culture.
Right.
I'm talking about the devout black church and the evangelical Christian community. There's lots of common ground there, and you just don't get it because politically you're always hearing it's one side or the other. But it's not true. And I tell you, man, there's a lot of grief out there. And this is, again, I emphasize, it's a very Christian issue in the United States. These Christian worshipers were attacked by a crazed gunman. And
right.
It needs to be, that perspective needs to be maintained here in all of this as well.
Yeah, and if you'd been at the conference, you would see that the one thing that doesn't exist within the church is racism.
Yeah, it's the least racially consumed part of American culture. No, people don't know that.
Right, and they don't want to talk
it's
about that.
It's the number one, you know, probably that and sports.
Right.
The two worlds where it really doesn't matter what color you are. I'm serious, and people don't know. They think it's all this racial, and they think it's immigration, because that is the way
the media wants to present.
It's drummed out into our ears day in and day out. And I'll tell you, most of that is just a lie. It's their lie, because these people live primarily in lily white liberal communities, and they have their talking about tokenism.
About racism.
Yeah,
too.
They have their token elements of race within them, and they empower these people and they genuflect to these people. But the reality is, normal American people in a real I'd say serious minded religious environment, whatever it happens to be, are the least racially consumed people you'll meet.
Right.
Probably next to the as alongside of sports, because that's a competition. People just are there to compete. You know?
Right. And I don't know if you saw the article about the lady that actually spotted his car. She stated that she felt it was God that prompted her to actually follow this guy and call the authorities, because like our society is, you don't want to, you know, pinpoint somebody. You don't want to get somebody and cause a lot of trouble with people for somebody that, if you don't really know what the issue is, the problem is. But she said she really felt prompted that she needed to contact the authorities, that it was God's hand doing so. And so the fact that that could occur and that's how he gets caught is even more of a reflection of the Christianity that we have in this country is very, very much relevant.
Yeah, exactly. And I think there's a lot of people out there who view this as a diabolically inspired action, that there, whatever was working in this kid,
evil, absolutely,
it was evil, but it was evil, it was inspired evil. And to do something so heinous at a time when America is really kind of nervous about these kinds of things,
right.
It just couldn't have been, it's almost a strategic evil, you know, in that sense. And it's, you know, I really think this summer, you know, we have to pray, America.
Right. Got to keep praying. All right, we'll be back after these commercial breaks with more Solomon on Blast.
Says Johnny, baptize me. I say, Roger and roll. Roger and roll. My soul for the Jews. But I say, John was a preacher, cause my Bible says so too. I say, Roger and roll. Roger and roll. My soul arise in heaven, Lord, for the year when Jordan rolls.
Hallelujah.
Roll, Jordan, roll. Roll, Jordan, roll. My soul arise in heaven, Lord, for the year when Jordan rolls.
Hallelujah.
Roll, Jordan, roll. Roll, Jordan, roll. My soul arise in heaven, Lord, for the year when Jordan rolls.
We're back with Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk 1210. So along those same lines, in Ecclesiastes 7:26, Solomon says, "I find more bitter than death the woman whose heart is snares and nets, whose hands are fetters. He who pleases God shall escape from her, but the sinner shall be trapped by her." And who am I referring to in this particular story? Well, this is Rachel Dolezal, or Dolezal, whichever pronunciation you want to have. And she's the one that, if you hadn't heard, she was the head of the NAACP in Spokane, Washington, and turns out that this woman who claimed to be black wasn't, that she is really a white person. Now, I don't know if you've heard about this or not, Fred, but the Lifetime Channel is going to do a movie on her life. The only thing is,
she does kind of fit the profile, being that that Lifetime does a lot of movies about crazy women.
Yeah. Well,
is it going to be that kind of portrayal?
Well, they're going to do the movie probably along those lines, but the key aspect of the movie, it's going to be in black and white.
Wow, you got me. So
sorry. I think that one got a lot of people there.
So Well, you know, that would be funnier if not juxtaposed against this other story.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
But there's a really interesting link, though, between these two ideas, really, if you think about it. And that link is an unhealthy fascination with race. You know, and you go back to this kid, Dylann Roof, mm-hmm. and all his rantings and ravings on one extreme side of the issue. But the Rachel Dolezal is a really interesting case study on the other extreme side of the issue. And I won't compare her to a murderer.
I mean, that isn't what you're trying to get to, obviously.
But yeah. There is this bizarre, unhealthy fascination with race right now that it's been mutating in all these different forms. And, you know, I'll even throw into this discussion again, carefully, on that context of only unhealthy fascination, Howard Schultz with Starbucks.
Oh, right.
You know?
Yep, I remember we did the story with Kareem.
And finally he had to pull back that policy of wanting his baristas to discuss race and white. That was nuts. And it just shows me that these people somewhere are tormented in their minds about the subject. They can't deal with it. And somehow they're constantly looking for some the fancy Bible word would be propitiation. You know, they're looking for some kind of way to get forgiveness, I think.
Right.
In their tormented minds over this issue. I don't know. I think they can start classifying this maybe as some kind of disorder at some point, that people cannot see past race. They can't see it. And so, to me, that's not discussing it, thinking about it all the time is not a healthy thing. We're, after all, human beings. This is the human family. You know,
everybody's of the same race, the human race.
Exactly. There is a very distinct Bible position that everybody is of the same race. It's not just in the Old Testament. It's also in the New Testament. From one blood, it says, everybody came. And that's referring to Adam and Eve, but not only Adam and Eve. It refers to Noah and Noah's sons.
Right.
Therefore, we're talking about a common family trait. And race, if you even conceptualize the term race, probably, you know, without getting into this discussion, goes back to a Darwinism,
right.
and the theory that
there was a superior race.
Life evolved through different races,
right.
and kind of, you know, came together, you know, in certain arenas. That's the concept. In reality, there is no other race,
right,
and other than the human race.
And
that's
everybody,
not a cliche.
Everybody knows, you know, Darwin wrote the book, The Origin of the Species, but they never look at the subtitle on that, which it has to do with there being a superior race. So if anything, Darwinism is the original racism. And that's,
it literally is racism in that it believes that there are different races.
Exactly.
Contending, you know, with each other and, you know, coming together.
So you could almost point to that whole concept of Darwinism, humanism, that there is no creator, that we all just evolved, really as the basis for a lot of what we see today as racism.
Yeah, exactly. That there are, in fact, there are real partitions between human beings, which, if you believe we all come from one race, you don't recognize those partitions, so they don't have to consume your thoughts to this unhealthy
level. That she's...
Now, let me just say this. I believe a lot of people who do discuss these things and think about these things are well-meaning. I'm not saying they're not well-meaning.
Right.
And but I just don't think it's healthy. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Nevertheless.
If there's problems, obviously those problems need to be resolved. If somebody, like I said earlier, if you're really truly harmed by somebody, then there needs to be, that issue needs to be addressed. But like you say, the fact that that this is their extreme focus is very, very unhealthy, because the Bible literally, I don't think anywhere can you find anything that references the color of anybody's skin. I mean,
there's a couple of probably places I can think of, but it was not good. Right. When they did, it was...
It was usually from a negative aspect.
In other words, it was an endorsed idea.
Right.
It was, you know, Miriam comes to mind. She was actually disciplined for it. So what we're talking about here, though, this idea that all this constantly needs to be discussed, what it reminds me of, Doug, is the old bloodletting procedure that they used back in the 19th century, like
how to get rid of viruses
and diseases, and they'd cut somebody and they'd let it bleed out, hoping it would bleed out.
Or using leeches to suck it out or whatever.
And it, they realized later that they just brought on all these terrible infections.
It just messed things up.
And I think that's what's happening to the body politic with a lot of these discussions. They're leeching it out, but it's causing major infections.
Right. We've got a caller on line one here, Joe. Good morning, Joe. Welcome. It's still morning. Welcome to Solomon on Blast.
Hey, guys, it's a good topic. It's always a, I'm just wondering if it's a God-given ability to adapt, and we're really making controversy where there is none. And I think all the traits that we have as humans, when we just, you know, walk along with the basket, it's a trait. And if you go somewhere, you know, I'm not going to expect to, I adapt. I come from the Midwest, you know. I'm adapting to it in the desert. I think those traits are natural features that God gave us, if there is a God, you know. I don't know. I think it's kind of the racism to think that, I don't think Darwin created racism. I think it's the traits, as we start breaking things apart and defining science, that is just like a chapter in the book. Doesn't that make sense?
Yeah, but I think my point was, in terms of Darwinism, is that there always was a very strong belief that God created things. And Darwinism, maybe it wasn't him specifically, but the people that read his material, followed it, and took it to the extent that we see it today, what they basically consider neo-Darwinism, is what really is driving this whole thing. It wasn't that he per se initiated it, but the thoughts that he had, people have taken to an extreme and are using it over and over.
For example, Joe... I would say we're not saying that was his intent.
Right.
For example, like the super race concept that drove Adolf Hitler, he was very much a Darwinist, and he basically interpreted Darwin in that way, that there are super races, and the German people were
that race.
Were that race, you know.
And I think the key word there is the interpretation of it, and with Darwinism. It was maybe not so much Charles Darwin, because he was really looking at the species from the different islands that he went to. It was really the people's interpretation of it and the extension of it well beyond what anybody would even consider logical. But that's where we've come when you throw out the fact that there is a creator. And somebody had to have created what we see in and around us, and he created us in his image. But if you throw all that away, then there is, and it's relativism, you can do whatever you want. Right?
Okay. All right. A few things. I think that, you know, the comparison to Hitler being a Darwinist would be like, it's too broad of a brush. I think perversion and power, you know, there's so many chapters in the Hitler book. Delusion, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Look at the mess. Look at the mess that was driven. I don't know how evolution and, you know, the creation of meth, essentially. I don't know if, you know, if he was driven. You know, I get the supreme race, but yet that is always used. We use that, you know, in our forms of nationalism for the term exceptionalism.
Yeah.
And when we start, you know, kind of mixing religion with Darwinism, you know, everybody comes out dirty, because anybody, you know, my carcass is 50 years old. And if I listen to the guys who are pushing the Bible's narrative, and it's like Earth, you know, humans are 6,000 years old, who can buy that? I just can't. you know, and it's stunning to have to get frame up my mind and accept that for one. And number two, it kind of pitches into the kind of everybody gets dirty in it because nobody's coming clean and saying, well, maybe our math is off. Maybe it's not Darwin was created by God. These are human traits. And, you know, all these arguments that we're having, they're just they're trouble searching for somebody to think about it, you know? Hmm.
Well, you know, the only thing we would say, Joe, we got to move on, but it is we're discussing, you know, this tragic story in South Carolina and the unhealthy fascination with race, and that, you know, these concepts are discussed in that work. So
right.
We appreciate your, you know, your point
your
of view.
Input. Yeah, very, very good. Yeah.
I appreciate that too, you guys. And you know what? I'm sorry I didn't get to comment to that guy because I think that. You know, it was really interesting to him pick the defenseless and
right. His
Lutheran minister to come out, you know, and I didn't even get to hear the Lutheran minister's comment because I'm actually kind of disinterested in this because of all the psycho-optics that ensue and the psycho-audio sound clip of we always revert back to the simple stick versus rock mentality of, you know, guns versus... you know,
right. Religion
and sin and all that. This guy was, you know, I don't know, did God invent Alzheimer's? I don't know.
No.
Did God invent delusionary approaches?
Okay,
I don't
Joe.
Know. But this
all
guy
right.
was weird.
We appreciate the call. Yeah, you're right. He was weird. All right, thanks, Joe. We appreciate it. We got to move on. So, yeah, I think it is a very extreme, it is extremism, and it's extremism in the aspect of, like you said, two sides of the issue. The one that says I've got to embrace it and make it my own, even if it doesn't make any sense, versus the other side of the extremism, which says,
well,
you
know,
can't have it.
I would say this much. A lot of neo-Darwinists today are thinking people, you know, intelligent people who obviously embrace having trouble, you know, working through some of the other, you know, like he was talking about, some of the science versus creation and concepts, whatever. But I think you have to own that word race. And I don't think they want to own it. They think they try to like, but it's there. It's really there. And you know, you have to go back to the origin of the species and it's there in spades. And so you got to deal with
it.
And that's what he believed. He believed that races were competing against other races. And the superior races, no matter what species you're talking about, I'm not just talking about humans, any species, that the superior races would emerge in natural selection.
Right. Well, we'll continue our discussion after this commercial break. More of Solomon on Blast. We'll be right back. All right, we're back with more Solomon on Blast in our last segment here. You know, this issue is a tough one to discuss from all aspects because you can't always know exactly what's in people's minds, what kind of motives they have, or even what their background is and why they think the way they do. I saw an article, Jimmy Carter, Americans still holding feelings of superiority on race. This is from a president that, come on, after how many years? And you think as a president, you would have expected him to see the diversity of this country and the exceptionalism of people within the country. I mean, look at where he came from. He came from the South managed to become president.
I think Jimmy Carter's just telling us about himself and all the people he knows that they still struggle with it in their hearts. And I, going back to the unhealthy fascination, I think people are looking for a way to exercise this out of their souls. And it comes to a point where you just, we were talking, you know, during the commercial here, just kind of like throw this in. We were talking about millennials, and I said the one thing that I really like about millennials, and there's a lot of social challenges they're facing, but right. they seem to be less consumed by race than any generation I've seen. And I think that is a wonderful thing.
Right.
And they seem to see past it. And I just say that, you know, Jimmy Carter's generation, I mean, it was always front and center. And they can't, you know. They can't get around it. And there's one other analogy here, Doug, that I want to use. It comes from working out, you know, and the anaerobic threshold. You know, as you get older, you start learning terms like this, whether you like it or not. And basically, yep. when you're working out, you can do, you know, running, whatever, aerobic exercises rather. There's a point where your heart rate hits a certain place mm-hmm. where if you pass that point, you're no longer doing your body any good. You're not doing anything but hurting your heart and hurting your muscle tone at a certain point.
Maybe that's why I felt so bad yesterday.
And you have to back off, get a proper heart rate in order to benefit from your exercise. And mm-hmm. so, you know, we need more discussions on race. I think the racial discussion in America has hit an anaerobic threshold. That we've passed the point to where you keep talking about it. You're like, you know, and I'm not just making fun of these people, but, you know, you get the image of a person who's always on the therapist's couch, you know, trying to, you know, recreate the feelings that they had when they were 5 years old and associate those and sort them out. I mean, there's a point where you just got to stop talking about it and just do the right thing, you know? And I think that's where we are right now. I think the last thing we need is, you know, not to pick on Starbucks anymore.
Right.
Is, you know, some kid at some barista having to explain white privilege to somebody exercising it, getting a triple, whatever latte.
And
so,
yeah. And Carter's comment said, you know, the dreams of civil rights movement have not been realized. And I want to say that from a government perspective, that's probably true because the government comes in and divides things racially, has done a lot to separate it. But if you go back to, like I talked about earlier, the church, there really was never a need for a civil rights movement. People get along because they have the common bond of brotherhood through Christ. That all of your racism, all of your viewpoints on whether that person is good or bad, you don't see it through the aspect that I think the non or the secular world does. You see it through the eyes of Christ. Everybody's the same.
Yeah, one of the great verses in the final book in the Bible, the book of Revelation, and there's a vision that John has, you know, as he's an old, he's the last disciple. He's on an island, and he has a vision, and he sees people from and these are his words, every tongue, every nation, every kindred, every people, and every language. He sees them assembled together. He sees this picture, and he describes it in the best words he has. And he says, I see a host of the believers that are here to worship Christ, and he says they're from everywhere, and they're every mm-hmm. color, and they're of every language. And that, to me, is the gold standard, right, of human relations right there. And it's all around, you know, the lordship of Christ.
Right. So it has to be that aspect of things in our lives that make the difference. The wisdom of Solomon doesn't discriminate against black or white. He discriminates against the wise and the foolish and the evil. That's where our discrimination should be.
And so what's he really saying? He's saying it's the soul, it's the inner you that really matters.
Right.
The outside is just the shell.
And the day. And like we said, the church, we don't see the cost that the church has saved this country in terms of supporting people from all different aspects of life. But know, we can see the cost in terms of this kind of thing when it's brought out that there is this need to have a constant discussion with regards to race. And so it's a difficult subject. It's hard to talk about, but at times you got to do it. But until next week, if you think Solomon, think wisely. You won't have that problem. We'll be back next week. Thanks. My soul.